Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and today is June 10th, 2021. And so, we always have these calls on the second, fourth Thursday of the month, gosh, for the last 10 years, I think. And so the recordings are always in your members area there on the website, performingedgecoach.com. So today's the 10th, and then the next one will be on the 24th, June 24th, which looks like on my calendar is a full moon. So hopefully it'll be a nice night to watch a full moon as well. So those will be our calls coming up. And then today wanted to talk about, these calls of purpose is, of course, to answer your questions and to talk about anything that's helpful for you, for your practice, for your business, for your marketing. And so I wanted to talk about, because it was big in the news this last week, Naomi Osaka, she's actually the highest paid athlete in the world right now, worth $55 million, I think, pretty amazing. And she is a top-ranked tennis player. And then in the French Open, she withdrew from the French Open tennis tournament to protect her mental health because she didn't want to do the press conferences. But there's a lot more to it, I think. And so it really highlights our mental health in athletes and the need for sports psychology for our work. So I think it can be good for our profession that this is being brought to the forefront. So to ask, what does this say about mental health for elite athletes and what are the hidden pressures that all athletes face, and how does this affect, what do you think about this, and how can this help, maybe it can help us get more clients because more athletes and parents realize that mental health is really key here, and that athletes have feelings, they're human, they are just like anyone else. They need the same kinds of support. So we can ask, how can this incident help our profession and as sports psychology coaches, and what can we do to prevent these types of incidents from happening, and how can we help our athletes to prepare for media interviews and for just pressure in general from performance. And, what about the hidden anxieties and depression that we may not notice in athletes? So just wanted to highlight those things today. And if you have questions too, so let me know what those are. You can say ask them on the call live here, or send me an email. Either way. So some people are listening in the background because they're on mute and driving, I think. So traveling. So welcome, Dave. Do you want to just mention what the kind of clients you were getting with from different sports, different professions again?
Sure. So I got a call from somebody who's a professional poker player, and I'm
poker player as in cards, right?
Yeah. And so we're talking like 28-hour. Like marathon poker games, but he'll be there anywhere from like 4 to 5 days a week, 6 to 8 hours at a time. And so this is like heavy duty taxing on his brain, and just the kind of depression piece that kind of kicks in. But I'm finding that to be true of a lot of the calls I get. I got a call from a family with an 11-year-old where the young man is very depressed, but he's a baseball player, and that frustration and his expectations of perfectionism are kind of playing out on the field. So, I'm kind of running the gamut right now, but there's always a little bit of that mental health piece kind of showing up for me, probably because of how I advertise and my background as a therapist. I think that's kind of what's pulling those clients towards me.
Yeah. Do you want to say how you advertise or how you're putting what you say on your website helping bring in clients?
Sure. It's, well, primarily through Psychology Today and then on my website itself. But, I talk about my sports psychology certification, my background there as an athlete. And then, you know, my 18 years as a therapist, you know, working with the toughest toughest adolescents and families in crisis. And so I think parents look at that and they think, this guy can handle, you know, my son or daughter and really help them out. And I think it's the sports psychology piece lately that has really been pulling them in. They're like, well, he's very anxious, but he also has a lot of, you know, issues out on the field, and I really want him to work on it. So, you know, it's not just on the field, it's other places, but that's in many ways the pull for the kid as well. Like, oh, he can help me with my sports piece, even if they don't want to do, you know, say, therapy per se, but we can do both.
Right. It could help an athlete get into the therapy issues through the back door, so to speak, or through a different road where they might want to, they might not necessarily come through, you know, or might think, yeah, there's a stigma attached to therapy or that sort of thing, but sports psychology is more well accepted, I think. So yeah, that's a really good thing. So congratulations on that, on getting new clients. And that's great. And my experience has been the same. I've gotten, even though I don't advertise for specific sports, that it's been got clients from all different sports arenas, from lawn bowling, to one of the solo sports, to speed skydiving, one of the fastest sports, to team sports like softball, like you say, and I've gotten more women lately. They were working with softball, and so there's lots of different avenues where you can reach people. And are you doing, you said sports psychology today, are you doing a writing article or doing an ad kind of thing in their online?
Yeah. It's all built in through the electronic health record, and the sessions are built in, like the telemedicine and everything. So, like, it's really nice because, you know, you just, I'm doing primarily telemedicine, a couple in person here and there, but it's nice because I post there, and you can do, you know, short videos and kind of post them up. For me right now, because I'm so busy.
On sportspsychologytoday.com, on their website?
Oh, no, it's Psychology Today. And then
Psychology Today magazine?
Yeah, but it's the online version. And so
it's
fantastic. And the kind of the rule of thumb is you put up your bio, but, you know, with a picture. And once I put up the picture, you know, like, they could see I was a young, you know, athlete, and I was, you know, kind of wanting to be active with my clients and engage them. I think that just set it off, you know, onto another course. I was getting like 3 or 4 calls a week. And so, I think that's a really...
You're getting several calls a week?
Yeah.
That's great. You have to pay for that service?
I think it's $59 a month, which is well worth it because they host it for me, and they also let you...
They host your website?
Yeah, and they do telemedicine through something called Sessions for free, and it's HIPAA secure. So I love it because just you log into Psychology Today, you have Sessions up above, it takes you to a virtual waiting room, and you log in, and it's all secured, HIPAA secure. So I've been using that for months now. Instead of Zoom, I just use that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'm glad you could share that with us. It's another way of getting your name out there and being able to be in a... And, yeah, they get a lot of traction kind of thing. So, yeah, it's kind of like they have their own social media thing going, but specific to psychology. So that's great. So, yeah, so I want to talk a little bit here about in general mental health and psychology and sports psychology and athletes and why, now is really a great time to be doing our work and as sports psychology coaches and to be able to, put our, it highlights why sports psychologists are so needed right now. So with Naomi Osaka, just to, put yourself in that in her situation for a moment, if you can visualize being her. Imagine you're about to play a tournament against the top athletes in the world, and the temperature is really hot, and there's thousands of in the stands, and you're 20 years old, and it's just like a whole world is opening up when you're not that experienced yet in the world. And unlike other professional sports where players can get guidance from coaches, with the tennis, they're not allowed to even gesture at you, your coach, so you can't get that guidance from someone that you know and trust. Instead, you've just got thousands of screaming fans. And so... And it's tennis where a sport, like as players as young as 14 can go pro and play against the top players in the world. So sports in general, can be a pressure cooker of highs and lows and great victories and painful losses. And we know like the John McEnroes of the world throwing their rackets. And it can be, there's all kinds of emotions that go up and down. And the media love that, of course. The physical aspect is what's, it's really taxing. The matches can be as short as 40 minutes or they can be as long as 2 or 4 hours. I mean, 4 hours out there in the hot sun sometimes, and so a lot can happen in that time, especially when it's extreme temperatures. And so I think, athletes are expected to be superhuman oftentimes, and all that comes as a mental cost as well. And here's this woman, young Naomi Osaka, who's just won 4 Grand Slam titles in the sport, and the pressure of playing and winning has really tapped her into, lots of, it's brought out her anxiety and depression. And then she announced she wouldn't participate in any of the news conferences, saying that she had some mental health issues, which is really commendable. I think that she actually was open and honest about that. She said, "I felt that people have no regard for athletes' mental health, and that rings true whenever I see a press conference or when I partake in one." And so there was that going on. If you can imagine yourself out there, what that would feel like being in that kind of situation. And she announced she would withdraw from the French Open and then was fined $15,000, and which is nothing for her, but for other athletes just up and coming, that would be a lot that they couldn't handle. And then, but worse, she was threatened with being disqualified for not speaking to the media, the press conference during the tournament, to protect her mental health. I mean, as sports psychology coaches, performing edge coaches here, we, can certainly sympathize with her. And I think the French Open officials, initially, they reacted not with concern, but just criticizing her for not fulfilling her obligations, because it's in her contract. She has to, speak to the media. And so, but this came after she actually won the first round. It wasn't because she lost. So she was just saying that it's in general, no matter whether you win or lose, she's got a lot of anxiety about it. And you wonder, and she talked about feeling bullied in the press conferences. So, you're battling two priorities, the obligation to fulfill your job requirements, which is, in this case, includes talking to the press, or protecting your mental wellness. And so, you know, and it's a real difference when you have a physical injury. That's okay. That's a reason for not performing your duties, or you can't play, or you can't do the press conference. But it's easy to walk off the field. But the mental or emotional injury, it's all of a sudden that's not, that doesn't reach the same level of legitimacy here. And so, you know, we wonder, and it's being brought out now in the press and in all of the, in all of what's going on, and so she's, and here's someone who's, she's athlete, she's black, and she's Asian, and a female. All of those things, those categories have been discriminated against, and she's someone who's been protesting, like with Black Lives Matter, the George Floyd death, and also she's really cares about all these social issues, and in Osaka's, her native Japanese culture, they frown upon speaking out with these things, and so that's going to make her anxiety even worse. So, and then is there her gender, being female is, a lot of times females, there's an expectation that women were going to accommodate the questioning, and no matter what the inappropriate questions might be. And so there's all of that going on too. And I think the fact that she spoke out about the being depressed and the media during the press conferences causes her anxiety and feeling like being bullied, that's, she really stepped out there to say that. And I think I know I felt that with when I was I got second in the Hawaii Ironman triathlon. My own experience as a top athlete felt like with press conferences, they always often want to have a gotcha situation. They want to ask questions that are going to get you riled up, or something they can say that's controversial or create conflict or create some kind of scandal that they can talk about. And now these days, of course, with the media, with everything being online and click-based, and the more views they get, the more advertising, the more money the media make, it's all around profit, and they want to, it's like a battle, a competition within the media to create more scandals and more outrage so that they get more views. And so, and it's really, athletes are being used as the target of that, or let's make someone cry, or let's make someone cringe, and that'll create more views. So it's really, in this case, Osaka is really bringing all that to the forefront here. And she said that, if I was ever thrown into a situation where I have to speak in front of 100 people, I feel like I'm start shaking. So she's not very shy and not an outward person. Some athletes don't mind that at all. Athletes, we need to recognize that athletes are really different. And she talked about long bouts of depression and anxiety. And so I think that, and then of course this whole pandemic year with the loss of being able to do competitions has resulted in poor mental health. And I think so all that needs to be considered here. And a lot of times, there's this feeling like, oh, if you got mental distress, you just get over it. And I think if people don't, that's why athletes need us, I think, as a support system. And I just wanted to bring out, the context of this, that, mental health is an essential part of overall health. Of course, we know that, and we need to educate the world about that. And mental illness is really common among athletes. It's often overlooked, and it's stigmatized. And I think one statistic shows approximately 20% of U.S. adults age 18 and older report having mental illness, and it's even more with teenage kids. And the prevalence of mental illness is even higher among females than males. At least it's higher reported because they'll report more of it. We don't know the number. It may not be accurate with males because they don't might not report as much of this to mental health workers. And it's you know, in a lot of also I want to say among kids, people 15 to 44, depression is the most common disability, cause of disability in the United States. So many individuals suffer more from one mental illness, and depression and anxiety often occur together. And this is really a staggering statistic that the U.S. Census Bureau reported. 42% of U.S. adults experience some symptom of anxiety or depression, 42%, which is a six-fold increase during the pandemic. Six times more people are experiencing anxiety or depression. So so that's why our field is so needed, I think, and the prevalence of mental health is really it's even higher with people with a racial or ethnic affiliation. So I wanted to put that backdrop into this. And I think with this situation, we hope that, you know, Osaka's choice to make her mental health struggles public really serves as a turning point here on how mental illness is perceived and addressed in professional settings. And I think, you know, we feel like sometimes athletes are invincible and they, you know, they need to be strong and mentally tough. And I think, you know, it keeps them from talking about their mental struggles and reinforces that idea that struggles are a sign of weakness. You got to be strong, that sort of thing. And I think we really need to reexamine things. And I think we can help with athletes also with that struggle with when they talk to the press. We need to think about how that can happen in a different way. I know when I was working with some of the top athletes at the Olympics, especially in Greece, worked with athlete there, you know, who is a former Olympic champion, and she had to talk to the press a lot, and you know what she would say might be misinterpreted, and then it gets repeated over and over again. She said something about her sponsors, the shoes weren't made well or weren't correct. That's what the press thought she said, and then the sponsors got angry at her. And that got brought out in a press conference. And so things get amplified, and it can, just some little thing that you say can get misunderstood. And that really snowballed into her not being able to perform as well as she thought. So that's an example. And what I did with her was be able to sit down after each of her the press conferences before and after, and you know, doing a therapy session or doing a time to prepare for what was going to happen, because that's just stressful and more stressful than the sports event itself. And then being able to help prepare for talking with the media, and then afterward kind of debrief and de-stress from that, and let the athletes, you could be a real sounding board for your athletes with what happens in their lives to, you know, both in the sport and outside the sport, because coaches can have just that same effect of being really creating a lot of pressure there. So let me just check in with you. Dave, what was your thoughts about this this whole issue so far, or how it affects you and your work?
Sure. So, you know, I can really see how, like, outside pressure just kind of forces people down kind of this very narrow path of, you know, I can't make a mistake, you know, I could say the wrong thing. And, you know, my experience with especially my younger track athletes is they're just kind of fear of other people's opinion, and you know, everybody's watching me, right? And so it takes time to build confidence around that. And when you're, you know, 16 to 25 years old, that's when you build it. But you know, I can imagine when she would, you know, when the tennis player was trying to answer questions at these press conferences, that she felt very cornered. And so, you know, I would probably do cognitive behavioral therapy with her, you know, all kinds of support and presence. But, you know, I'm just thinking just what courage it took for her to set that boundary and say, nope, can't do it. Got to work on myself. I mean, that takes a huge amount of fortitude and courage. But I'm hoping that they'll do some kind of CBT with her, because if you can see it, if you can see the press conference as a game just as much as you can see the match as a game, and that you're going to manage it as you see fit instead of being a pawn of others, I think that would probably be a very good start.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's a great point, Dave, to see the press conference as a game, just like your sport, like it's a and you can think of it as a mental game. And, in fact, Venus Williams pointed out, she said, here's how I think of it. I think I look out at the media and I say to myself, it's like I'm having a conversation with them. I say to them, you, the media, are not a tennis, probably not a tennis player. You'll never play tennis as good as me. And so, I'm the expert up here and, I know what I'm talking about. So she looks at it as, a way that she's in control. And I think that's important to be able to, we can actually do, in addition to the, CBT, for those of you other people on the call might not know, that's cognitive behavioral therapy, looking at thoughts and feelings and how it affects your actions. And we, as Dave was saying, so you can, it's important to manage, your own feelings and thoughts. And also that it's okay to, if you feel like you're being bullied, to just say, I'm not going to answer that question, or give a very short answer and then move on to another question. You know, you can, so we can actually do media training with our athletes to help to be able to manage those questions. I know one athlete got up there, another situation there, a press conference, and just said, I'm only here, answered every question with the same response, saying, I'm only here at this press conference so I won't get fined. so I won't have to pay money. I won't have to get fined. That's how I answered every question. So it's like, I'm here, but I'm not going to really answer questions. So it was kind of a real protest, right? So, that's good. Have you, Dave, have you had other situations where you've had athletes with a lot of pressure like that?
I can just think of one. I had a discus and shot put thrower who basically just was caving under the pressure to perform because there was a scholarship on the line. And, you know, the initial response from him was to get angry and overthrow and work harder, and it ended up resulting in a small injury for him that took him out of the game for 3 or 4 weeks. But what I noticed is that when people were coming to him, he was getting more and more guarded, you know, kind of like isolating a little bit and not as vocal. But, you know, we started working with him, and, you know, he came out of it. You know, it kind of coincided with him healing too, but, you know, just the building up his integrity and how he talks to people and, you know, when others asked him to stop throwing, you know, being able to hear that and, kind of slow down the process a little bit so he could hear others. But also just operate with integrity, you know, be honest and true to yourself. And I think that was a good lesson for him because he was really just, you know, being triggered by other people's questions like, oh, when are you going to be able to compete again, that kind of thing. And it was sending him on tilt. So So I can imagine if someone's at a press conference, you know, and they're getting hammered with questions that, you know, are meant to create intensity. If you can't see what the purpose of that is, or you're just in it and you can't observe it and see it for what it is, that would be very triggering, to say the least.
Yeah, and knowing that oftentimes the press, they're trying to look for a weakness or look for something that's going to get you riled up or something that's to make you emotional. Like one athlete that I worked with got asked a question, how can you play knowing that your father just died? You know, yeah. You know, someone's father just passed away and just caused her to start crying right there, you know.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, you know, just to, like, let's get the most difficult thing in their life and go for it with a knife and turn the knife. It's just, you know, it can be really hard for anyone to handle. And so, you know, we can, I think, help athletes to prepare better and to know that, yeah, it is just a game that basically the media, they're out there for profit to try to get views. And if you can ahead of time, you know, do some breathing exercises, helping them to cope and to prepare. And actually, you know, simple things like, you know, Toastmasters training helps you to speak in front of people. And a lot of athletes don't have that. They focus only on their sport and not on the social side of things. And Toastmasters is usually very inexpensive, $36 a year or something like that, and you know, to 10 groups. And of course, they've been virtual these days, but now hopefully they'll start meeting in person again now that things are opening up with the pandemic. And there's Toastmasters groups worldwide, so people could be there. You know, they can learn how to speak in front of a group of people just, you know, for 5 minutes. Each person speaks a simple topic. And or they could actually, in a Toastmasters group, you could learn how to have people ask questions and how to field questions. You start with simple questions and then work up to more difficult ones. And we as sports psychology coaches, you could also help athletes prepare for these kind of things with asking the athlete, okay, what kind of questions do you think they'll ask you? And make a list of those questions. What are the easy ones? What are the most difficult ones? What are some that might catch you off guard? And let's practice how to handle those. And letting the athlete know you don't have to answer every question. You can just say, it's okay to say I don't have that information with me right now, or I don't wish to speak about that. I'll get back to you on that or something. You see that happening all the time with the top athletes, and you know, you can have them watch other interviews of other people, other athletes, and other business situations. Mark Zuckerberg or somebody, when they're testifying before Congress, you see them all the time just saying, I don't have that information right now. I'll get back to you on that. You can defer questions. And, you know, so we need to help athletes have an armor. I mean, think of it like you say, Dave, think of it, the press conference as a game, like just like other games, and it's a different game that they need to learn with different skills, but be able to say, you know, so they're, you know, it's like tennis. The media is throwing the ball to you, or they're saying, here's a question. Think of it like they're tossing the ball to you or hitting the ball to you, and now it's your turn to return the ball, and you can shy away from it, or you can run away, or you can figure out, just like you do in tennis, how am I going to return this ball in the best possible way, the fastest way, the way that will get it back in their court, so to speak. So you could use an analogy based on their own sport, on their game, kind of thing. And that might really help with the athlete picturing it in the context that they're most familiar with. So they can easily do that. So I think there's lots of ways that we can that this can teach us things, I think it just emphasizes the fact that we need to screen for depression and anxiety and other sources of stress, and give athletes the best treatment we can. And help athletes, we need to work on the relationship between athletes and the media and athletes and other kinds of pressures as well. So, I wanted to talk a little bit about the different things that this brings out, things that mental health experts like ourselves, what this teaches us about what we can do. And I think, one of the things that we can all learn from Osaka's decision to withdraw is to, first of all, to make mental health a priority and live life for yourself, before you judge someone else, ask yourself if you understand what's going on with that person, what they might be going through. So sometimes athletes can be really creating mental injuries with each other. And sometimes, like we saw some athletes come out and say, oh, well, against Osaka, and say we need to, it just needs to do the press conference. That's a job obligation, and that was it, because they don't have a problem with that. But we need to, be able to understand the battle that people are going through. And so, with sports parents, to tell them, if you are a sports parent, watch your children for clues of what might be going on that's causing too much emotional pain. And if your child is... are they doing this just to make you proud as a parent? Or you need to, tell the athletes, or give the athlete a chance to do this for themselves. And then, just talk about, I think one of the key lessons this teaches us is that your well-being comes first here. And ask yourself, what is in my own best interest here? When they're making a decision about something, what is in my own best interest, or what will help my well-being first? And I think, in this case, she had been placing sports and competition above mental health. Sometimes we think of sports as something that can really help our mental health. And in a lot of cases it can, but then you need to see the signs when you're feeling anxious, when you're feeling highly stressed, when you can't, like she's saying, she couldn't sleep at night, all of these during the games. And so, because it's just worried about the press conferences, and so that's going to affect your performance, of course. So I think, we need to realize that these mental health challenges are real, and that, we think, high-performing athletes are put in a position of suffering silently oftentimes because of all the expectations that are put on them. And I think that's where we can be a trusted source, where athletes can come to us and talk about what's really going on. And so I think it's a reminder that we have a long ways to go as a society toward understanding mental health and mental illness. And I think as sports psychology coaches and performing edge coaches, we're really ahead of the game with understanding this stuff first. So we need to, you know, educate people about this. And especially coaches also, oftentimes, they can be as brutal as the media and the press conferences with that. Have you found that, Dave, that the athletic coaches, or are you the athletic coach also, or are you working with other athletic coaches there?
Yeah. So I'm a javelin coach at the high school there. So, yes, I am working with other coaches.
Yeah. I just wondered, have you found other coaches, you know, sometimes they're not as tuned into the mental health part of things?
Yeah, the school I'm at right now, this is like uncharted territory for them. And it came up, like, they knew that I do the sports psychology piece, but I was so busy teaching, instructing javelin, boys and girls, both teams, that their idea was, oh, you could just do a mental health minute. And I was like, well, hold on a second. It's a little
a minute.
I laughed.
And
they laughed too when I told them that's not what I do. Not even close.
That's funny. We'll just keep it to 1 minute and then shut up, right?
Yeah. And then he goes, well, and then he came back the next week. So, like, I'm really kind of teaching them how it works, right? And I do stuff with the kids along the way. But he came back the next week and he goes, okay, at the end of summer, you'll do a weekly program for about 6 weeks, and you'll take them all the way into the school year, and it'll be like an hour and a half sessions you do, and you'll do it for free. Like, hold on a second. We went from a mental health minute to, like, me doing about 30 to 50 hours of work, you know, at the high school with kids who have never done this before. I was going, let's just set up the program so it's realistic. Let's do something that is a match to the kids that they will engage in. It's just the right amount of time. You know, I'm happy to volunteer where I can, of course, but, you know, I got to make a living too, so.
Yeah, so they pay you as a javelin coach, and then you just fit the mental health part into it.
Yeah. They're trying to kind of backdoor me into, like, doing the sports psychology piece, you know, for free. But here's what came from my coaching of the javelin is parents have now stopped me out to do individual work with their kids. So that's what that. And even I volunteered a little bit, and now the business is coming kind of on the backside of being able to do individual.
Paid individual sessions with athletes.
So, like, yeah, part training, part instruction, but also sports psychology piece would be, you know, an additional hour. So, yeah, that's been a nice kind of inroad to accessing those clients at the school, because I like working with the high school kids, you know.
Yeah,
one of my preferences.
Yeah, it sounds like you're good at it too. And so, yeah, it's allowed you to have sort of a private practice there as part of that. It's just funded by the parents, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then with other coaches, can you help them understand I was just wondering if they think what you're doing is kind of a foreign language, or you have to teach other coaches too, or you just sort of do your own thing?
So they like it, they want it, and it is all new to them, so they're not in any way blocking. But I find that the only thing to be true, all programs have their politics and their structures. They've been doing it the same way for, you know, a decade. And coaches, I what I said to them was, you know, in my first year here helping you guys out, I see some things structurally that, you know, coaches and the program would need to shift in order to make this happen too, because we all got to be on the same page. We all have to believe and speak the same language. Otherwise, kids will slough it off. I mean, it's high school, so we're trying to engage them in something that's really, like, new to them too. So, you know, structurally, we have to make sure that they're in, right? They're all in to give this a shot, to really do it. And that's been a little bit of more of a challenge than I expected. Let's just put it that way. Because the head coach has to be on point, and if he is just hanging on, per se, just hanging on sometimes or most of the time, that could be a bit bigger challenge to develop other parts of the program.
So great. Well, thanks for sharing that, Dave. And it's great that you've been able to work in your sports psychology to the track and field program into your javelin program. So I just wanted to mention some other lessons that we can learn from this situation with Osaka here, and just from mental health in general. And one is, if there is a mental injury, then or you got mental stuff going on, goals are important, but your goals can wait if there's something that is really pressing. I think be true to yourself and prioritize your emotional well-being. That's the greatest. That's the best way to be mentally tough, actually. And sometimes you have to take a side road for a little bit, and it, just like Osaka did, it's okay to say no to something if it's just too stressful, and to be able to say no is a sign of mental toughness. It's not a sign of weakness. And then another really important lesson we need to teach athletes from this is to trust your gut. You know, I think success comes from trusting your intuition, not just from being pulled toward other people's vision of your life, but to really trust your own intuition and standing, you know, what's right for you. And so telling athletes, you ask yourself the question, what is right for me right now? What's in my best interests here? My best long-term interests, short-term and long-term. And how can I stand up for myself and be able to take charge of the narrative of my life here? And it's not just to be a victim of someone else, but to be a hero. And so I think, you know, like her decision to withdraw, maybe it caused short-term pain, but, you know, financial loss to some, but the long-term gains are going to be huge. You know, she probably ended up writing a book and doing a whole story on this thing, and being a champion for mental health, you know, can lead to, you know, a whole new avenue. And being able to, we'll probably see her speaking out on this issue, and it opens up the door to what's really going on with the media and those press conferences, which, you know, got shoved under the carpet, which is really damaging to athletes. And just I think another lesson to teach people is that going against the grain isn't necessarily a bad thing, that you can show leadership and courage and resilience and grit. So pushing back against the industry and the cultural standards is okay. We need to do that sometimes. And if you're in a position of power like Osaka was, you can push against things and against the industry, and hopefully that will lead to good change there. And also, I think another lesson that we can teach athletes from this is to, you know, just to honor your limits. That say, ask yourself, what are my boundaries here? What are my limits? What are I willing to accept, and what am I not willing to accept in terms of my own boundaries, my own limits, my standards for myself, and teach athletes to set their own standards. You know, the sport has standards, and you know, in this case, the Women's Tennis Association had certain rules and standards, but it's okay to ask yourself, what are my standards here? What am I willing to do? What am I not willing to do? being able to set that for yourself and say when something is just too much, to just say, I can't do this anymore. I know I had to do that with an internship that I was doing at one university where it was just so oppressive and so demeaning that I just could not stand it anymore. And I just, even though I was getting my hours there for my psychologist license, I just realized I had to leave early and go to find another setting. And I just realized my limits were just being pushed too far, and that this was really affecting my mental health there. So it was a difficult decision, but I had to leave there. And I realized that I checked in with myself and just realized I can't continue with that. So it's important to prioritize your own self-care over the needs and priorities of others, and know what your limits are and honor those decisions that you make. And and another lesson I wanted to bring out was from this is just to allow, give your time, when someone does make the decision to leave, or to it could be, with an athlete just deciding to take a break from their 1 or 2 weeks because they have an injury or something, and this could apply to physical injuries as well as mental injuries, or if an athlete is having a difficulty with a coach or with something that's going on, to take a break for a week or two, or figure out a different situation. Sometimes I notice parents, they decide to just pull their child out of one team because it's so oppressive, because the coach is yelling at the kids and swearing at them even, and taking their child to another team. That's setting a limit that the parents are doing to protect the child. So I think it's good to allow time for a reset once you do change a situation. And choosing to withdraw from an important professional activity might be the best decision. Allows us to prioritize your mental well-being and relationships, and it's okay to do a hit the reset button kind of thing. That's a step that Osaka took here, and that we can learn to take as well. And then physical and mental health are both important. I think that's really one of the lessons here, that it's not just the physical health that's key in sports, but the mental health is extremely. She was setting a really good positive example for individuals around the globe who might be trying to balance their professional demands with their mental and behavioral and social health here. And so I think it's really vital to realize that both mental health is health, is part of overall health. So I think that's what you're doing, Dave, there with your work at the university or at the high school. And I do that with my athletes all the time. We are one of the people that can be an advocate for our athletes, when they're in tough situations, and to be able to say, let's look at your overall character, your overall development here as a person, not just what the coach is mostly concerned oftentimes with winning is number one, and do whatever it takes to win, but we need to emphasize the whole person and what do you need to be able to recover and to do well. Yeah, and one other lesson I wanted to emphasize is just resiliency, teaching athletes how to be resilient. And so with therapy and coaching that we can do that can help and address that, learning to bounce back. And, with this COVID-19 environment, we're We want to help develop focus and empathy and help people to be calm and confident and to be able to slowly come back and bounce back from all these tough situations. So it's important to look at how can you bounce back and how can you find another path. If one athlete like Osaka has chosen to take a break from the sport, that's okay. And then that's the time to reflect and be able to bounce back and find something else, find a new path. Sometimes it could be just a new way of training. It could be a new coach you need. Sometimes it's even breaking away from that sport and finding something different. I know for me, as a professional athlete, when I was a triathlete, I did that for several years. I was able to travel around the world and be able to make my living from that. And then at a certain point, I realized that it was just too much stress on my physical health and mental health. And I realized that I wanted to change just back to running, because it was my main sport, and still train as a triathlete, swim, bike, and run, but in terms of competition, just do the running races and not the triathlons. And that was a important step for my physical health and mental health, to be able to realize sometimes you want to change your sport or change the direction of your training or sport. And we as sports psychology coaches, performing edge coaches, can help athletes to make those, decide what's in your best interest, long-term interest, and help athletes to make those decisions. So, yeah, so those are the things that some lessons I wanted to bring out from this, what happened with Osaka's withdrawal here. And the most important thing, too, is to help athletes to seek help from you as a coach, that there's, this type of what we're doing is really helpful. It's incredibly helpful for people who are faced with these tough decisions and tough times in their lives. So, Dave, what are your reactions and any questions that you have?
You know, I think today, most of all, just thinking about the mental health piece and how that plays out for just young people in general, especially coming out of COVID and, getting back into the game, I'm finding that people are experiencing a lot more anxiety just in general about kind of reengaging. In some places, it's still telemedicine for me. So, I'm going to keep in mind what we talked about today as far as, setting boundaries, kind of being firm about it. But also, I feel like the CBT work, the cognitive behavioral work I've been doing, to really help people think differently, manage their emotions, that kind of piece, that's been really kind of my mainstay. But when it comes to making choices, what she did, making that choice, that was pivotal. I mean, it seems like maybe just one smaller choice, but I think that will change the course of her life. I really do. If she can do that on such a big stage, maybe she's sending a message to the system that it needs to adjust a bit to. And they might need to manage those press conferences a little differently as well, so that it's not such a snake pit, if that's how she sees
it. Right, exactly, yeah. And she said she's willing to talk with the media and the Women's Tennis Association about how these press conferences are run and what, to try to manage that situation better. I think that's good that, we need to teach athletes what they can control and what they can't control. Maybe there's more that we can control, that they can control about a situation and make it a smaller press conference or shorter time or less questions, all of that, and be able to prepare them better for these kind of things, and to realize that it's all just a game, there's lots of learning can come from this, and there can be, if athletes can learn to manage a press conference like that. They could probably manage being able to do public speaking. You know, it could lead to a public speaking career. A lot of athletes have, after they've retired, they've been able to do public speaking and get paid for it, paid very well for it, for that. So if you can do that, then it can help you to be able to spread your message more, to care about that. I know when I first started, when I was starting to write my book, I had no idea about speaking, and I was really nervous and anxious, and I thought that I was not effective at all. And then I went to Toastmasters and joined National Speakers Association, and just learned. I wanted to be able to get my message out there about sports psychology and the power of this, and so I learned step by step, and spoke for small audiences first. My friends spoke to my friend's cat and dog. That was my first audience, a cat and dog. Just a little joke there, and then spoke for small groups, and then spoke for groups of 100, and then I've actually spoken for an audience of 10,000 people before, and it's as well as being grilled by 12 people. Sometimes that can be even harder. So, it can happen when you're not a natural speaker. You can still learn to do this. Anyone can, I think. So, and it can really help build your confidence, too. So, congratulations, all of you. Thank you for coming. And congratulations, Dave, on getting more clients and more of different sports and different games. And it's great to be able to do that. You know, I've gotten clients for test-taking anxiety. That's something that, you know, I wouldn't consider, that's not a sport, but it's certainly performance anxiety. And people, you know, look for a sports psychologist for that area. So, Dave, you're in high school. Kids are taking tests, looking to take SAT tests for colleges, and there's a lot of anxiety there. And so a lot of students are looking for ways to gain that confidence to be able to perform well on the tests. So, there's many ways that this can translate. And there's so many things we can do with our sports psychology certification that you not all have now. And so there's just many avenues there you can work with in the sports area, in the game area, with test-taking anxiety, also with business, with public speaking. You know, you can help people to perform. The public speaking is a performance sport, basically. It's performance, so you can help people, athletes, when they do need to speak for things and do press conferences, you can help coach them with that. Even if you're not a professional with media training, all you need to know is ask the athletes know what questions they're going to be asked. They've been asked these difficult questions before, so ask the athlete, what questions do you think you'll get asked, and what are the tough questions, and then work on, do a role play on how to answer those. That can all really help the athlete's confidence overall. And once confidence transfers from sports, to it can transfer right into speaking and the media conferences, and it can also go the other way. From doing well in a media press conference, it can help do well in your sport as well. So it goes back and forth. So yeah, thank you. Any questions that you have, or any other things to cover?
I think we're all set. That was very helpful.
Thanks, thanks, Dave, and thanks Anna L. in France, and John in Nebraska, and Jews in Texas, and different people calling in, and we look forward to our next time. This will be, I'll get the replay up here shortly, and on the website, I'll send you the link for it also. And if you have questions, other topics you'd like me to cover, just send me an email and we can get those covered this next time too. So next time on the 24th, June 24th, we'll have our next call. So, yeah, look forward to talking with you all then. And thanks so much. It's such an honor to work with you. So have a great week. Thanks, everyone. Okay. Okay, sure. Bye now. Have a good week. Bye.